session number 4808, reel 1.
Golding, reel 1. Could you tell me first of all, Mr. Golding, how you came to join the army in the first place?
Yes, I was a volunteer, actually, and I joined into a particular outfit, which was the 89th Light Attack Battery, which was stationed at Oxford.
When was this?
This was very early 1940, early January 1940.
Why did you decide to join?
Well, I was still keen with some ideals at the time. I particularly joined, though, that particular regiment because, in fact, a cousin of mine was already in there.
And what was your rank and duties whilst you, when you first joined?
Oh, I joined as a gunner, and my duties were those. We had very primitive Lewis guns at the time. We were expecting to get Bofors guns, which were the very newest weapon at the time. And in fact, we never did see any in England. So we were stationed on various sites around the Gloucester, chiefly where Americans are now, like Risington, Brides Norton, and Hayford.
Now, we can't go into your early service in detail, but later on, in 1942, you found yourself in Singapore.
Yes.
Can you tell me how that came about?
Well, I actually found myself in Singapore. We were sent abroad. In fact, I can give you the exact date of sailing. It was November the 13th. We sailed from Gourock in Glasgow on, ironically enough, a ship called the Empress of Japan at the time. And I think, I honestly don't know, but I think we were destined for the Middle East. Certainly all our kit was Middle East kit at the time because the war with Japan hadn't started. And I suspect from various people I've talked to afterwards that the whole Alamein thing should have been a year earlier if all that our particular convoy had gone where it was intended rather than switch. But the war, so we left on November the 13th, Pearl Harbor was December the 7th, and we got switched actually at South Africa. We'd made Port Durban, and when we were at Durban we were switched from that to an old P&O boat called the Narconda, I think it was. And then it was a mystery tour, but it turned out to be Singapore.
Was this an uneventful voyage, or were you attacked?
No, it was quite uneventful.
And did you arrive in Singapore in 1941 or 42?
Yeah, 42. In fact, again, I can tell you exactly, because that was also a Friday the 13th. It was January the 13th. And it was a very memorable occasion because all the harbour side of Singapore had been very carefully mined, because the theory always had been that the only way you could invade Singapore was from seaward and not from landward. And so we had to crawl along, and it was in the middle of an air raid. And in fact, the first thing we saw was much heavier cloud than this, and it was sheeting down with rain. And the first thing we saw was a couple of American aircraft, and they were Buffalo Brewsters, which just crashed out the sky. And we disembarked in a hurry at the double and got away somewhere into some sort of shelter. So it was a pretty disastrous start. I think we had a good idea of what life was going to be like.
Were there any casualties during this disembarkation?
No, not on this one, though I believe the following one there was. I think there would have been if it hadn't been for the cloud. We were rather lucky we hadn't realised at the time, but afterwards we realised, of course, that they were out looking for us. They'd seen the convoy days earlier. And they knew we were anybody coming in. Along there was a sitting duck target because they had to go so slowly because it was only very narrow roads. And we probably would have been spotted, but we never saw any aeroplanes except these two that crashed. So we were very lucky.
When you got ashore at Singapore, what was your impression of the situation there? Could you describe it?
Oh, yes. It was from everybody who told us anything, it looked like the end, you know, utter disaster. What was so obvious, because after all, we were a light ACAC unit, we'd been stationed on aerodromes, was the total absence of any Allied aircraft of any sort. There was a tiny little World War One Gloucester Gladiators. There were some of these Buffaloes, which are very noisy things, but very, even by 41 standards, were obsolete. And there were a few of those Dutch wildebeest things knocking around, all of which I believe were destroyed before the end. Though why our convoy, incidentally, was in fact quite a valuable one, and why had been, as we learnt afterwards, been marked out for attack, was that we did have a ship carrying some Hurricanes on board, which had been especially air-cooled engines so that they could operate in the tropics. But I don't think they made very much difference to... very early on, I'm not sure now, obviously, within a week or two of landing, we'd been told that the Australians had landed and were going to make a big push up into Malay. I think, as I remember it, the Japanese were halfway down Malay at that time. In fact, having done this push, it didn't amount to anything at all. And I don't think they were the cream of the Australian troops anyway, but however they were, they got pretty heavily defeated. And so there was pretty much gloom all around.
Were these Hurricanes that you mentioned visible on the decks of the ships?
No.
So how did the Japanese know about them?
Well, that I wouldn't know. And in fact, I don't know for sure they did know, but I was told by people I met afterwards who should know about these things that they did know.
What was the reaction of the troops to the lack of Allied aeroplanes? Did they grumble about it?
Yes, indeed. Yes. Well, when I say troops, our particular mob did, because we were so used to seeing Spitfires, Hurricanes and so on, and Blenheims. This seemed absurd. But I'll tell you another thing. Why? Because in daytime, this is the first time we'd ever had this experience of... the special Japanese bombing. You know, they'd come over in their arrow formations in odd numbers, usually be 11 or 21. And so we're told, I think it's true, that only the leader at the point actually had a bomb aimer. And when he used to fire his machine guns because you could hear them, that short burst. And they'd all drop their bombs at once, which it was all right if they were over there because you knew quite safe, but if you were underneath it, it was the most odd and unpleasant experience. But what had infuriated us so much was the fact that they were going along just too high for anything of ours to catch. We were the wrong sort of ACAC, because they didn't need light ACAC, they needed heavy ACAC to hit them. They were well out of our range. And we just sat there impotently on the docks while they did this. So it wasn't very good for morale at all.
Who did the troops tend to blame, if anyone, for the lack of aircraft?
I think Duff Cooper got a lot of stick. I don't know how far he was to blame, but he was over there about the same time. And that was sort of known as Duff Cooper's Air Force. He got there.
So, can you tell me what happened to you next, personally?
Yes. I truthfully can't remember exactly how long after we landed, but It had only been a matter of days, or at the most 2 weeks. Some of us, not the whole of the regiment, I can't think why not, we were sent up country to the last aerodrome that we held in Malay proper. That was just beyond Kuala Lumpur, and I think it's called Kluang. Now we held that for a matter of days until the RAF, what was left of it, moved out. We had a very good example there of Japanese tactics, actually, of seeing an Allied patrol, I can't remember what planes they were using, coming back in, and then Zeros zooming in on it just as it was about to land and catching it, you know, to a few feet off, zooming out the sky, out the sun. Well, there were really very few Japanese, very few Allied stuff left, and what was packed up and disappeared somewhere. And we were left, and we left. And after about a day, nothing happening, we were pulled back. So we didn't actually make any particular contact at that stage. Though at this time, the Japanese were infiltrated. As far as one could tell, there was only really one really good road going up north to south, and the rubber plantations on both sides. And the tactic of the Japanese was to infiltrate all the way along. And you'd have various places infiltration notices put up. One of the things I think you ought to bear in mind is the fact that I don't suppose any of us had seen a Japanese before, and or seen a Malay before, and there's not all that difference if you don't know them in advance, because it's now, but at the time there wasn't all that difference. And what the Japanese used to do very cleverly, sort of just put on singlets, the universal wet singlets and shorts, and troop off and down the road, and we really wouldn't know if they were Japanese or anything else. So it's quite easy for them to do that. And one of their tricks was to lob hand grenades, climb up the trees and lob hand grenades into whatever vehicles we were riding in, up or down.
Did you actually see that happen?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. It attempted to happen to the what I was in, the lorry I was in, but obviously it was a bad shot, bloke who threw it.
And what happened to the chap who threw it?
Oh, I don't know, we left him. We were just zooming on. You see, they wouldn't be isolated and nobody would stop for anything like this. We weren't very well armed, of course, at this stage. We were supposed to... we were very badly armed. In fact, I don't think we had one rifle per man. In fact, I'm sure we didn't.
In what other ways did this lack of equipment show itself?
Oh, well, but, very old-fashioned guns. As I said, we still hadn't got our Bofors. We got our Bofors at some stage while we were out there, but we hadn't got them then. And Bofors, anyway, were no use to us, because nothing came down to our range.
What was there in the way of equipment that was really missed?
Oh, I think the theory, which is apparently was prevalent at the time, was that you couldn't use tanks in Malay. Well, so we had no tanks, but the Japanese thought you could use tanks, and they had tanks. And that was obviously a huge advantage.
Did they use them effectively?
Oh, yes, very effectively. And also, they were trained for cyclists. Was an extremely good way to travel there. You could be very fast. And also, I'm not sure what the exact ratios are, but obviously their ratio of heavy transport to per unit was much smaller than ours. I mean, we'd probably need about four or five lorries for 100 men, or whatever it might be. They would only probably need one lorry for the same number. And obviously this was quite powerful.
So it was not just inadequacy of British equipment, it was that our equipment wasn't appropriate either.
That's right. Well, of course, I think we were expected to go to the Middle East. I mean, apart other things, that our uniforms, which were light khaki, stood out very much in that greenery, whereas the dark green stuff and the camouflage stuff, which became commonplace later, was very good. And we still had very much Boer War type pith helmets, which are absolutely useless in monsoon weather because they get sodden and so on. So our whole equipment was wrong.
What colour was the Japanese uniform?
Well, muddy colour, and plus green. And also, of course, they lived off the land. A lot of it was British or Dutch. Dutch was very good because they had the green from the Indonesia, and they anything they could get hold of.
So you left off in the narrative of what happened to you personally with saying that you were withdrawn from Kluang.
Yes, yes.
And what happened to you then?
We went back to our main base in Singapore, and now comes a little bit of a blank for me, but I know we were on one of the aerodromes in Singapore, but we were pulled out of there late, practically the last day of January, and told to we were being evacuated in a very small boat. Really, they were so small that we did take our guns with us, but we couldn't get our guns below deck. They were all sort of strapped up on deck. And we left there on the last day of January. I can remember that because my birthday happens to be on the 1st of February, and I knew we were on board. And we were going south. I have no idea, incidentally, where we originally were destined for, but we were passing through the Banker Straits that's really off the coast of Sumatra, and there's the Isle of Banker on one side and Sumatra on the other. We were passing through there, and we were attacked by a Japanese bomber and sunk.
Can you describe what happened?
Well, the actual sinking, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes, very easily. Apart from the fact that we had been having quite a party, as it was my birthday, that because we'd managed to get lots and lots of whiskey from the docks when we embarked. But very frustrating. First of all, it was an American plane. It was a Lockheed of some sort or the other, whether it had been captured or whether it had been sold pre-war, I don't know. And it was coming along quite openly on its own, and everybody started to wave to it until it started firing his guns. It was really quite an appalling, fortunately for us, quite an appalling bomber, because, as I say, we had no real guns. All we had were rifles available, and one Lewis gun, which wasn't properly mounted. We had no defence at all, and it made three or four runs and dropping bombs. Each one was a near miss, but it didn't actually hit, otherwise we'd have all been killed, obviously, because it was such a small boat. One good bomb would have blown the lot of us up. And then he made about three or four runs firing his machine gun and left. The boat itself, incidentally, I now remember, was a Yangtze River boat, because the captain, whom I can see now, was a real old Yangtze, China, hand sweat. And the boat actually then did a slow sink. It apparently stove in below the waterline. We'd thought to start with that it hadn't done us any harm at all. We were rather pleased. Interestingly enough, nobody had been wounded and nobody had been killed, obviously. But it did, and there was a question then of abandoning ship. This wasn't quite as good as it should have been because, first of all, there weren't enough lifeboats to take us anyway. And of those that there were, I would imagine three or four of them were bullet holed so much that they sank as soon as they were put down. However, most of us either got in the boat or else there was lots of flotsam around of wood held on, and the ship sank. But fortunately, again, because you know, hearing all the stories one hears of being dragged down with a ship, it sank on a sandbank, and that its propeller was still out the water even when it was down. The other thing which kept on going through my mind, which worried me a lot, was the sharks, but I don't understand all that banging. I would have kept sharks away anyway. Anyway, we're in the water approximately 3 to 4 hours, and then some little boats, although a big boat went past us and didn't stop. And honest, at the time I was cross, but now I realise I don't think I really blame it. It was because I found out afterwards this was an absolute death trap, this bank of straits, because it's fairly narrow and there was no way to manoeuvre.
So this was a British vessel?
I wouldn't like to say now, it's too far away. It could have been Dutch, but it was an Allied vessel anyway. But then some boats came out from Sumatra. I assume that the this boat anyway must have radioed a coastal station. And we were picked up, obviously. And again, well, one person, we lost one man, and he only really died, I think, because he was suffering from a poisoned hand, and I don't think he could have put his life jacket on properly.
Could I interrupt you at this stage to ask about this party in the boat?
Yeah.
Was it a properly organised party, or was it just an ad hoc group?
Oh, just an ad hoc group. There was nothing very... nothing very terrible. I mean, all we had was whiskey and First World War Army biscuits.
No, what I meant was it an actual unit, or was it a group of people who had just haphazardly got together?
No, we were all the same group. And we were all there was only our battery on board, plus the seamen and the crew and the officers, but they weren't naval, or at least they may have been sort of co-opted into the Navy, but they were really Yangtze riverboat people.
And how many of you had been on board?
It was very difficult for me to say now, but because I never saw, but certainly over 100. We were really pretty well packed.
So what happened to you after you'd been picked up?
Now this is where there were splits, because we weren't all picked up by the same people. And in fact, I was in the minority group. There were only really not much more than about 20 of us. We were taken up to Palembang, up the river. I think it's called the Musi River. We were taken up to Palembang. And the rest were taken to, I can't remember the name of the town, at the southern tip of Sumatra. Now, we stayed there, more or less recuperating. There wasn't very much to do in Palembang at that stage until one morning we suddenly saw a whole lot of planes come over, and, in fact, there was a drop of paratroops.
Japanese
paratroops, yes. This led to quite a lot of problems, of course. We were expected at this stage to go out and do something about it.
What, to attack them?
Well, to to defend at a place to find out what exactly they were after. And in fact, what they were after, there was some sort of airfield. It was a very primitive one, as far as I remember. And up there, their idea was to cut the road between that and Palembang, which would, in fact, sort of Sumatra being largely uncultivated and, in fact, some of it unexplored, I believe, that the really only by air was the main way of going. There's one railroad, or they wanted to cut the railroad as well. So we were sent up there. There was very little we could do. In fact, we did have quite a little battle with a group, and because they'd cut the road, and well, we more or less had to try and get through. We did, in fact, succeed. Again, we didn't lose very many people, but I think we must have killed about a dozen or more Japanese. We managed to kill quite a few who were, in fact, caught up in the trees of the paratroops. but on the whole, we had one or two native troops with us. I can't remember. They weren't Sumatran, because Sumatrans never fought for the Dutch. They're probably Ambanese, actually, who were to the Dutch what the Gurkhas were us. They were really sort of the outstanding troops in the pit of the area. And so we did, in fact, do quite a lot there. And then we inexplicably, and I haven't the faintest idea where it came from, we got instructions to break off and come down to the town and, in fact, get on a train. I suppose it's probably near enough the last train, which was going south. I think it was very bad. So I don't know who gave the order, but I think it's a very bad order, because I think we'd more or less dealt with the paratroops. Added to which, I had read since that the aircraft carrier that these people came from had been damaged by British naval ships, which would have meant that they couldn't have got back anyway. They were stuck, or at least there was no follow-up coming, rather. So they couldn't consolidate. So we really handed them Palembang. They didn't really have to fight for it. And it was most annoying, because we were feeling quite cock-a-hoop, because it was one of the occasions that quite clearly we were doing rather well, considering we were no more trained to be infantry than we were to fly to the moon. But we were rather cross about that. So, but anyway, we did get on this train, and we did, in fact, meet up with the rest of our unit. And I still can't remember the name of the place in the south. But we did get on, they put us on what was an armed merchantman, which was now a naval vessel, which belonged to the Australian Navy, which then took us across to what was in those days called Batavia, which is now Jakarta, Java. And this must have been late February, I should think. No, middle February, this must have been.
And what happened to you at Batavia?
Well, to start with, life seemed very calm there, because it was very quiet, in fact, though, of course, we were rather taken aback that we'd lost so many naval ships. So the convoy that we came out with, two or three days before it actually reached Singapore, was really a very imposing sight. There were Dutch battleships, there were British cruisers, the Exeter, and one or two others, which were very famous even in those days to us. And we heard from this particular ship, little merchant ship, had been in, I forget what they call the battle now, but the Battle of Java Sea, how they called it. His boat had been in there, and he told us, in fact, that, you know, all these ships had been sunk, which is rather sad, and it's quite clear when we got to Batavia that there was nothing much knocking around. But it looked at the moment that as if